Well, hey there, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of Cambridge Inside Out. I kind of wasn't able to produce the last show or two because largely because of all of the my work at the Harvard Extension School. So anyway, that's all past now. I turned in my grades the other day, and just so you know, I mean, this was teaching my ordinary differential equations class, which had 29 students. And amazingly, my multivariable calculus class, which had 210 students, it actually had a few more when we started out. So I was very busy during the holidays grading exams. Finally turned in course grades on, they gave me, the deadline was Friday. I was able to turn them, they gave me an extra couple of days. You know, it's usually the teacher, the students begging the teacher for an extension. So here it was the teacher begging the administration for an extension. But anyway, I got everything in on Sunday, which enabled me, thankfully, to be able to get back to paying at least a little bit of attention to what's going on civic wise, political wise, and including the what happened yesterday, which was the election of the mayor, vice mayor, and then on the school committee side, the under the new rules of the new charter, the election where the school committee gets to elect their own chair. It's not automatically the mayor. The mayor will sit simply as a an ordinary member of the school committee. Anyway, it was very interesting, you know, and they had little festivities afterwards with food and drink, and that was all very, very nice. And, you know, these things are really great opportunities to catch up with friends you haven't seen in a while. I actually had a tremendously good time yesterday after the mayor election, sitting and talking with former Mayor Ken Reeves. So it was great. It was really, really a good time. So let me just, you know, rather than bury the lead, let's just sort of say what needs to be said on the mayoral election front. Sumbul Siddiqui was the person who was elected. It wasn't an automatic thing. And I, so you know, what I do is I actually make a little scorecard and I keep track of how the votes are initially cast and how they are. You know, and then they do, sometimes they have to go to a second ballot, a third ballot, and so on. But very often, especially in recent years, the mayoral selection is, it's kind of worked out beforehand. And then people will, you know, fulfill whatever commitments they made to, you know, casting their vote for one of the candidates, you know, people who were seeking them to become mayor. You know, and once they've fulfilled those commitments, once it's clear what the outcome is going to be or where it's headed, then they start switching votes. You know, so that's exactly how things happen. So, I think in the first pass on the mayoral ballot, and I can show you, I made a table, put it up on Civic Journal. It was actually newly elected councillor Al Zuby voted for Siddiqui. Burhan Azim for Mark McGovern initially, but later changed it to Siddiqui. Tim Flaherty originally voted for Kathy Zuzi for mayor, but then later on switched it to Siddiqui. McGovern voted for McGovern and then later changed it to Siddiqui. Patty Nolan voted initially for herself and then changed it to Siddiqui once things were clear. I think, yeah, that's sort of when things really started changing. And then Siddiqui voted for Siddiqui, notion, you know, seriously, right? Denise Simmons voted for Mark McGovern, which makes a lot of sense if you think about the fact that Mark McGovern supported Denise Simmons 2 years ago, and then Mark McGovern became the vice mayor. It's often the person who brokers the deal that ends up as vice mayor, though not certainly not always. Sabrina Wheeler voted for Siddiqui straight away, and Kathy Zuzi initially voted for Patty Nolan, and then, of course, later changed it to Siddiqui. So that in the, when all the dust had settled, everybody had switched votes as sort of the classic make nice move to make it 9-0 to elect Sumbul Siddiqui for to be mayor. She, of course, served. She was elected or chosen by her colleagues in 2020, served 2021, and then that was the miserable height of COVID time. So she got re-upped for in 2022 to 2023 before Mayor Simmons took over. in the most recent term. Now, not that anybody really cares who the vice mayor is, honestly. There's no special authority associated with being vice mayor. I mean, it looks nicer on the letterhead, or as I suspect is the case here, if you're maybe thinking about running for another office, maybe it looks better to the outside world. So anyway, they cast the votes for vice mayor, and then originally it was 4 votes for Burhan Azim and 4 votes for Paddy Nolan. I'm pretty sure Paddy Nolan really wanted the designation, but anyway, then it didn't work out. And again, commitments no doubt had been made as part of the usual horse trading, and so everybody eventually then switched their votes to make Burhan Azim vice mayor. And again, vice mayor has no particular, I mean, other than the fact that if the mayor's not there, I guess that's the person who automatically picks up the gavel and substitutes. But other than that, no other authority whatsoever. I was actually more interested, be perfectly honest, in the dynamics of what was going to happen with the school committee race. In the past, the way it worked was the mayor automatically became chair of the school committee under the Plany Charter. But when the charter was changed this past November, there's still six directly elected members of the school committee, and then the mayor serves as the seventh member, but no longer as the chair. Though they certainly could have chosen the mayor as the chair, just as they could have chosen any of the now 7 members of the school committee. I actually thought that might actually happen because of the wheeling and dealing, because of some of these rather intriguing things that are going on with school committee, that somebody might have said, well, we'll sort of try and influence the city council election to help make somebody mayor. And then in exchange, we'll make that person chair of the school committee as well. But anyway, that's not what actually happened. So I went to that inauguration as well, brought my little scorecard for that as well. And in the end, David Weinstein, which is, it's very hard for me to imagine that he's now the senior member of the school committee, because it just seems not that long ago that he was elected. Ironically, with the little glitch that they had in the election in November, it almost looked like he was defeated, but in fact, he wasn't defeated. So anyway, it was interesting for that, because this, and I'll speak to this in a moment, but Elizabeth Hudson and Richard Harding were both voting in favor of Elizabeth Hudson, who was far and away the most popular candidate, I think, in the election, it's fair to say. And with 3 brand new challengers added to the school committee, it was an unusual dynamic, to say the least. And along with the newly elected mayor Siddiqui, the 5 votes were then cast to make David Weinstein the chair of the school committee. Now, what had happened in the past years is that school committee would elect the vice chair, and the vice chair did have some authority in the to whatever degree they were going to select, have subcommittees of the school committee. And by the way, there have been times, both in 100 years ago and when Tom Fowler Finn was the school superintendent, where the school committee elected not to have any subcommittees. So it's not an automatic thing that you would even need to have subcommittees, but they've gone back to doing that again. But the way the rules used to work was the vice chair would appoint the subcommittees. I don't think that's something that's specified in the charter, but it was sort of part of the tradition and the rules. Anyway, now that the school committee chooses its own chair, the presumption, unless I'm wrong, I don't think I'm wrong, is that now the chair, so that would be David Weinstein, will then choose the who is, do the appointments to the various subcommittees, should they have subcommittees. But they did go through the formality of electing a vice chair as well, and that person was, for that was newly elected challenger Caitlin Dubey. By the way, just in terms of pronunciation, some of us kind of learned a lesson that, we have on the school committee a Doobie, and we all thought we had an Al Zuby on the city council, but it's actually supposedly pronounced Al Zubby, Al Zuby, or pretty close to that, I believe. So we all have to kind of retrain ourselves to the correct pronunciations now, even if it rhymes a little less perfectly. It was an interesting vote on the school committee because there's this something going on here. I'm not going to trot out some of the big citywide mailings that were made and funded by the Massachusetts Teachers Association, but the Cambridge Educational Association, which is the name currently for the Cambridge Teachers Union, really put their thumb on the scale of the school committee elections. And they endorsed a slate of candidates, apparently, at least what I've been told by multiple people, with the understanding that we will, in order to be on our slate of endorsed candidates for school committee, I think there were six or seven names on there, you had to agree to certain conditions, which included supporting, I'm told, supporting a change. They really just support a change in the state law. Right now, it's illegal for teachers to strike, just like police and firefighters. You can't strike, right? But there have been places where they have in Massachusetts, and there are fines associated with doing so. And I think that there's a desire amongst the teachers' unions to make it so that they can just strike, and there should be no fines or anything like that to make it a right. I thoroughly disagree with that personally, just to be clear about that. But apparently, it was made a condition if you wanted to get the endorsement of this slate that you had to be okay with that. Perhaps even more problematically, especially with teachers' union contracts, coming up, apparently another condition was that school committee would vote to allow the head of the teachers' union to sit as a non-voting but fully participating member of the school committee, ex officio. So you're not really on the school committee as such, but you would be there, and then you could just raise your hand to the chair and say, "I'd like to be recognized," and you could participate just like anything else. Now, this is a little weird to me. I mean, at least my perspective is that the school committee is there to represent the citizens, and perhaps a little bit of extra dose of representation for parents with children in the Cambridge school system. So to have this outsized influence of the teachers' union, especially with the body that's going to be negotiating contracts with the union, that just seems like a problem for me. But there is a kind of a radicalization that apparently has happened with the teachers' union. This is not to say, by the way, the leadership of unions, and the people who make decisions about campaign contributions to individual candidates for city council and whatever, the leadership of unions, one should not equate those with the membership of unions. I mean, I don't know that all teachers in Massachusetts are on board with some of the somewhat radical agenda of some of the union leadership. So really, who's deciding who gets endorsements? Who would sit with the school committee? Not the membership. They're not like you're just grabbing a teacher and say, "You're the representative this week." No. It'll be the leadership. And that's a pretty kind of hard left-leaning group these days. So I don't know. I just find this incredibly unsettling. Now, I don't know for sure whether that was behind some of the intrigue in the voting, because again, normally, people will switch votes to, do a make nice move of making a vote unanimous for chair or vice chair of a body. So in choosing David Weinstein, there were five votes for Weinstein, two for Elizabeth Hudson. They didn't change votes at the end. They did not want to get on board with that choice. Elizabeth Hudson or Richard Harding were really the ones who've been serving, I think, most substantially for a while. when they came to vote on the vice chair, yes, there were five votes for Caitlin Dubey. But then both Richard Harding and Elizabeth Hudson chose to vote present, which I've never actually heard that happen. So I said, okay, there's something weird going on behind the scenes here. And then, when the vote was over, they didn't change it. They remained present. They didn't cast a vote for any of the above there. So, and we get another little tiny piece of evidence of the fact that something is afoot here too, is that the very first official vote after the election of mayor and vice mayor on the council side, as well as chair and vice chair on the school committee side, is to formally adopt the existing rules, preliminarily, subject to change down the road, right? Because you have to have rules, right? So city council, yeah, sure, they voted, to adopt the 20, the current city council rules, subject to possible revision down the road, no problem. On the school committee side, when that formal vote was made, there were five votes to adopt the rules, and two votes, specifically Louisa DePaula Santos and Caitlin Dubey, who voted present. Again, kind of unprecedented, quite honestly, because apparently they want to change the rules. Now, I can only, nobody's told me any background information about this here, but I suspect that may well have to do with this desire to change the rules to allow the head of the teachers union to sit on the board with the school board, with the school committee. I don't know for that. I don't know that for sure, but maybe they'll make that decision tonight, because even though the inauguration was yesterday, tonight, January 6th, they're having the first regular meeting of the school committee, and that could very well be part of the order of business. There is a, there already is an agenda in place, but of course you can change things, right, at the meeting if you want. I think their, primary agenda items are just choosing legal representation, because apparently the school committee needs lawyers, and I'm not quite sure what that's all about, but that's been the tradition for some years, so that's to be decided. So anyway, that was the political shaking around that was happening yesterday. As I say, I mean, I got tipped off. I knew Humble Siddiqui was going to get the five votes for mayor in advance, so I knew that. So it's kind of nice to not have the tension, at the meeting when you already know what the result is going to be. But I did find the school committee election, kind of interesting. So, let me just take a little time out here just to mention just a couple of other things. These are more on the personal side, because I think some people have actually commented to me, says, Robert, why haven't you been posting things on Cambridge Civic Journal as much? What's up here? So just again, just a personal note here, it's like, I'm a mathematics, a student of mathematics. I have a PhD in mathematics, and we have a tradition in the mathematical world where you think of your thesis advisor as sort of like, the next, almost like a parental kind of figure in a way. So my thesis advisor was Robert Devaney, who was a student of Stephen Smale, who was a student of Raoul Bott, who was a student of et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It really goes up to some pretty spectacular names, if you go back into the 1800s and earlier. But, again, I didn't see it coming, but my thesis advisor, Bob Devaney, passed away in November. And that's kind of a hard thing to take. It is, he was only in his 70s, but it was tough. But on the other hand, you go to funerals. Funerals are also reunions of friends. So there were many people who I hadn't seen in quite a few years, and many of the other students of Bob Devaney were there, and some of whom I had never met, because I was one of the earlier students of Bob's. And so I got introduced to my mathematical siblings, which was really a delight. So it was, it was hard, but there are, as I say, there are good aspects of even funerals. A little more shocking, and really, really knocked me off my kilter, was my former office mate, when I was a preceptor in the mathematics department at Harvard. It's a really great guy named Andy Englewood, and Andy, we were office mates for a few years. We remained friends ever since, and he actually was working within the administration of the Harvard Extension School, and I'm continuing to teach in the Harvard Extension School. He even started the Math for Teachers program, and some of my students now are actually students in the Math for Teachers program. And very shockingly, in December, Andy was found dead in his office, just heart failure apparently. And that was shocking because he was only 59 years old. And that'll really knock you off your feet when things like that happen. Again, it was a reunion, met a lot of people here, but this was not a reunion I really wanted to have. But it was a good man, Andy. So anyway, let me switch back here. Away from the personal and back toward the civic. All right. Actually, let me say one other thing here in advance, or right now. There was an interesting story here. The Cambridge Chronicle has, largely become a non-existent relic, which I really bemoan that fact. But, people like myself in writing Cambridge Civic Journal, which is not a newspaper as such, but, I try and provide input and information about people who are interested in civic affairs and who are in possibly. I've always been sort of on a mission to get any people involved in civic and political affairs in Cambridge. I mean, that's why I put together Cambridge Candidate Pages to encourage candidacy and to, kind of help things along, But another gentleman who did a similar task, but really more like a newspaper, was Mark Levy. Now, Mark, is in it, so anyway, I think it was 2 years ago. There was some decisions made here just in terms of financial stability. He would take the Cambridge Day, which he created, had taken to use getting legal notices, so they were able to get some income that way here. But apparently, this really wasn't enough. So there was a move to try and get the city to actually provide funding that. That did not go over very well at all, but there was a suggestion that there would be a nonprofit entity would sort of step in to sort of fill that void and whatever. And that did happen, and it has happened. There are, I still have some questions about the whole process, but again, it does fill a gap because of the lack of the Cambridge Chronicle, to be sure. Something about which I have really, really mixed feelings here is that apparently, within the last couple of weeks, Mark Levy just he left Cambridge Day, and I thought, well, wait a minute. Even if we'd sort of been on, we sort of you stay in your lane, I stay in my lane, kind of thing here. It's like there's something very disquieting to me personally about if you create something and it really is it has your it's your signature all over it. And then for whatever circumstances, or whether friendly or not so friendly, you end up being basically pushed right out of the very entity you created. I'm just not so comfortable with that idea. I do Cambridge Civic Journal, which is a very different sort of thing, but I would, if I were to partner up with somebody and then that somehow led me to somehow be booted out of the very thing I created and maintained for a very, very long time, I'd be bothered by that. So I'm curious as to what's happening here, where this is going, and it's part of the bigger question about providing local news for any municipality, any city, any area, including Cambridge. We'll see where this goes. And by the way, just so you know, and this is something I don't think is generally held knowledge here, but it was reported Dan Kennedy is a person who sort of made it public that there had been this severance with Mark Levy and Cambridge Day. And he mentioned that Dan did that Cambridge Day was started in or was launched in 2009. And I thought, well, wait a minute, I don't think that's correct. I think maybe the website as sort of a regular going thing may have been launched in 2009. But in fact, Cambridge Day actually really began as a print version. Rather, I never thought it was going to survive this way, but as a daily newspaper in 2005. And prior to that, in 2003, Mark actually met with me. I still have this folder here of like a prospectus that he produced, basically to sort of pitch the idea to people, you know, and I was one of those people he wanted to talk to about that. And there's this very, very interesting and sort of it's very interesting looking back at it because this was in 2003. This is like 23 years ago, you know, about how you fill the void of the sort of falling apart of local news in Cambridge. And I did find in my little binder here, I actually found some of the original copies here of the of Cambridge Day when it was first publishing. This was in November of 2005. So, you know, the idea got pitched 2 years prior, but then, you know, 2 years later, they were actually producing the paper. You know, and I couldn't say for how long the print thing lasted, but trying to do that as a daily thing, you know, without a big staff or big funding, it just seemed a very unsustainable thing to do. But I would call it a noble effort, to be sure. And then I think it kind of went into some dormancy, or I think, and then kind of relaunched maybe in 2009 as a sort of a real going thing. So again, I don't know where it's going. You know, I have not always been at ease with everything with Cambridge Day. I have never liked the anonymous comments aspect of it, which that apparently the new leadership has been changing it to some degree. We can all have our own perspectives about who is biased in the news and whatever. You know, my style is very different than a lot of the people who are over there. You know, but anyway, in the end, we just need a good way of exchange information. I've really bemoaned the fact that we have not had really a good water cooler around which people can gather just to exchange news. You know, things like neighborhood association listservs sort of do a little bit of that, but it tends to be sort of hyper localized when you do that. And there's always a problem with pretty much everything on the internet, which is that the bad tend to drive out the good. So almost anything that gets started with the best intentions eventually gets swamped by people with vitriol. I actually, for the first time in several years, I actually made a comment, really just a correction to a Cambridge Day thing this morning. But I have been hesitant to actually do that because I thought, well, you know, why invite abuse, right? You want to make a comment on a news article and somebody doesn't like it and then they start personally abusing you. I'm just not good with that. I've always made it my policy with Cambridge Civic Journal when I launched the Cambridge Civic Journal Forum, which allowed for more back and forth. That if you anybody who gets accused, anybody who engages in abuse is going to get banned for life. You know, that's how strongly I feel about that. You know, so anyway, we'll see where this is all headed. I kind of hope it all shakes out. My understanding is Mark has expressed that he says he's going to still be involved in things, and he was at the city council inaugural. As well as the school committee inaugural, he was very present, very upfront, taking pictures. So I think he's up to something, and I wish him well. And I hope we see more of him and in whatever context, because I think that would be ultimately a good thing. Basically, we all got to play a part here, right? It's all hands on deck. That's how it really should be working. So.